fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Gerard Moore here, our second hour on Thursday, the 31st of January. Prepper tip of the day, I want to encourage everybody to acquire and learn to use primitive weapons, including bow and arrow, crossbow, slingshots, tomahawks, and so forth. It's a lot of fun, and you'll be learning some useful skills. This show I've been looking for for a while here. This show we're going to talk about the largest enemy offensive during the Vietnam War called the Tet Offensive. Tet is T-E-T, Tango, Echo, Tango, the Chinese New Year celebration that takes place at the end of January every year. With us, we're going to have my friends Phil and Ralph. First, I'll talk about Ralph a little bit. And all of us, by the way, we were intelligence analysts in, with the same outfit in Vietnam, psychological warfare. Ralph and his lovely wife reside in his hometown, Jackson, Tennessee. Ralph is a retired psychological professional. He and his lovely wife live in Jackson, Tennessee, with a beautiful Corvette that I have not had a chance to drive. And if I promise to treat it nicely, maybe he will someday. My friend Phil is a retired fireman in Indianapolis. Phil also has one of the top 3 largest collections of antique toasters in the United States. Good morning, Ralph.
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
Really good. Oh, Ralph, by the way, was also a radio talk show host at one time and had a part in a Shakespearean play, which I was making fun of all these Tennessee men and women with doing a Shakespearean play with their southern accents, but they got through it okay. Good morning, Phil.
Ah, good morning. A good cold morning, John.
What's the temperature in Indianapolis?
Yeah. I think it's about 3 below right now.
Oh, boy. Ralph, what's the temperature in Jackson, Tennessee?
Well, I just checked this morning before I called you up, and it's 24 degrees. So,
I'll take 24 over minus 3 any day of the week.
Any day.
Okay, let me lay some groundwork here. We got a lot of people who weren't even alive when the Tet Offensive took place. First of all, Ralph and Phil and I met at U.S. Military Intelligence School the spring of 1967. All three of us were in the same class to become intelligence analysts. That summer, all three of us got orders to our new duty station, psychological operations in Vietnam. And we all arrived there the first week of September, 1967. Within a few weeks, I found out, I don't know about Ralph and Phil, but I found out, I was being told by the men in the intelligence section, John, there's this thing called Tet. It's a Chinese New Year celebration. And the Viet Cong are going to hit us. They're going to hit us hard. And I was told that within weeks of getting there. Now, Ralph, were you hearing the same things?
Essentially, yes, but I wasn't as timely. My information came, I'd say about either 2 or 3 weeks before the event. It was close to a month before the event.
Right.
We had a muster at the seminary, which was the advisory compound in the Mito, in which I was assigned, and we had a muster one evening, and the commander of the seminary basically said that what she said, that Tet is coming up around the end of January, and all the intelligence points to a large strike by the Viet Cong. And he went into, and they did something a little different in our area. I don't know that they did all over the country, but the Viet Cong put out propaganda. We were not the only ones putting out propaganda, by the way. Viet Cong were putting out propaganda at the time that the United States and the North Vietnamese were forming a coalition government. So during Tet, the actual Tet itself, they left the seminary alone to bolster their propaganda claims. They left us alone, but they put about, I don't know, somewhere between 15 and 20 snipers around the seminary, effectively closing down the seminary. If you stuck your head up just a little bit too high, it would get shut off. But
let me interrupt you here. Now let's back up a bit. The seminary would have been structure, grounds built by the Catholics that had been taken over and made use of by the United States Army. Would that be accurate?
That would be accurate. It was the first advisory compound, and I was to later find out in a bright, shining lie that it was a fairly important installation, in that any important person that came to Vietnam, after they landed in Saigon, they would go down to Mito and the seminary. David Habersham featured the seminary in his book, A Bright, Shining Lie. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, the first 91 pages are devoted to Mito and the seminary and the culture around that. Mito was a provincial-sized city. Think of it as like Nashville, Tennessee, the state capital.
Right,
but,
right.
Things have changed since then. I was going to do an ambitious book called, and I toyed with the idea of calling it "How to Play War," but I unfortunately could not do the research due to various medical problems that was required. But Habersham's book will give you a good idea of what was happening in my area.
And you were in the Mekong Delta. I was in Canto, capital city of the Mekong Delta, 4th Corps, and Mito was about, 15, 16 miles away, something like that?
It was north of Canto, as I recall. Maybe a little bit further than that. I'm not sure now.
No, that's okay. And Phil, you were up in I Corps near Da Nang, weren't you, sir?
Yeah, I was in Da Nang at the time of the Tet Offensive. I was still at the headquarters at the compound.
Right. And what advance warning about the Tet Offensive, if any, did you get?
I seem to remember like maybe day 2-3 in advance that Tet something could pop during Tet. You know, that was, we'd never been over there before, but that was their big New Year's celebration, and there was some talk that, you know, something big could go down. That was about all I can remember from it.
Now, for you listeners out there, if you take the American holidays of the 4th of July, Christmas, and New Year's, and combine those three holidays into one, that's Tet. There's fireworks, people exchange gifts, and it's New Year's, Chinese New Year's. It's the biggest holiday of the year in the Vietnamese culture. Now, all three of us were intelligence analysts, and we were all in psychological operations. Now, our friend Joe was in Saigon, and I was considering bringing Joe on, but we don't have Joe with us. Joe was the old guy. When we got to Vietnam, he was the old, mature guy at 24 years old, wasn't he, gentlemen?
Yeah.
The old guy.
I was just a teenage college dropout.
Yeah. And of course, he told us, we were all... The quarters they gave us while we were there were probably not all that nice, but at least we were indoors. And Joe told all the rest of us that he wanted to stay in Saigon. He was a city boy. In fact, he never even had a driver's license, from the East Coast, college graduate. And he said, "I want to stay in Saigon." And the rest of us all agreed, "Joe, you should stay in Saigon." And he started lobbying to get a slot for himself, and none of us did anything to disrupt that. And he got his slot, didn't he, gentlemen?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
As far as I remember.
Professional references, I think. I mean, he brought along a notebook with press clippings, the whole nine yards. He was ready.
He was ready.
Convinced those people that he needed to be in Saigon.
Right, very bright guy.
I think I think he suffered under the mistaken premise that he might not have likely be killed in Saigon.
Well, at least one of the reasons I went in military intelligence was to not to avoid combat, but to avoid being in brown water up to my chin, holding my rifle over my head.
Exactly.
And I thought, well, I'll be in combat, but at least I won't be in brown water up to my chin with my rifle over my head. But Joe went on to have a very excellent career in Social Security and ended up redoing their entire computer system. Very bright guy. I knew about the Tet Offensive by the end of September 1967 because I went to the classified briefing at 4th Corps compound at 8 a.m. every morning. And then I went back and briefed our commander because he'd rather have coffee with his buddies instead of attend that briefing. But all that fall, we were getting reports of the coffin builders out in the outlying areas building stacks and stacks of coffins. This was to give the Viet Cong peace of mind. They're all Buddhists, of course, that if they died in combat, there would be a coffin waiting for them. We had the lowest levels of combat in years in the fall of 1967. And then General Westmoreland gave a speech before a joint session of Congress, very unusual, his famous light at the end of the tunnel speech, where he told the United States Congress and the President, "The Viet Cong can no longer mount a credible offensive on the battlefield. We are winning the war." Now, that was only about 5 or 6 weeks before the Tet Offensive, wasn't it, gentlemen?
That was in November of 67, as I recall.
November. So it was about 8 weeks before. And, and there was a lawsuit. General Westmoreland filed a lawsuit against CBS in the 1980s. Because there was a conflict between the CIA, which I was in the CIA headquarters every day picking up documents and reading them. The CIA was saying it's going to be a massive offensive during Tet celebration, and Army intelligence saying, "No, it's not going to be any big deal. Don't worry about it." Our friend Joe in Saigon, I was on the telephone with him during the Tet offensive. He says, "John, there's truckloads of trucks with dead Americans in them going past our headquarters here." We got hit pretty hard, didn't we, gentlemen?
Yeah, as far as I know, I mean...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Phil.
Well, like I said, I was still in headquarters, and we had extra, you know, we did extra guard duty and extra security, and because our billet was a hotel in Da Nang, and the compound was several miles away, so we had to go back and forth every day. And I can remember hearing reports that the airport had been hit with some sort of attack, and possibly the Marine headquarters was in Da Nang, and possibly some attacks there, but we never saw anything or up close and personal, you know?
Okay. And then it was a few weeks later, you had an assignment that took you through the ancient capital city of Wei, didn't you? It's HUE, Hotel Uniform Echo. Tell us about what you saw in the city of Wei right towards the end of that offensive.
Yeah, well, for some reason, I put in for a field assignment right about that time, and it was probably the end of February or early March when they were glad to get rid of me, and I went farther north, and the convoy I was in headed north went through Wei, and, you know, I was amazed at the time. It reminded me of some of the shots you see of World War II where the cities are all bombed out and everything's broken, and so that's what I saw. It was a mess.
Berlin, 1945, in other words. Yeah.
Yeah, similar.
Absolutely. Well, Ralph, on your end, what was going on around Mito about the Tet Offensive that you could tell us?
Well, one thing is that the Sioux area is located kind of at the city limits, and Mito was also the headquarters for the 7th Arvin Division, the Republic of Vietnam, South Vietnam's army, 7th Division was in Mito. So politically, it was a hotbed for South Vietnamese army officials, etc. And the Viet Cong, and I don't know if there were any units of North Vietnamese, but the Viet Cong primarily took over Mito. They took over the army barracks, the 7th Army Division headquarters. They, like I said, they basically took over the city. And we could hear rifles, small arms, and artillery fire for days. Again, the propaganda was that we were out of it, and they sort of left us alone. But we kept hearing what was happening just through the air, as it were. And then after the major part of the offensive was over, since I was in PSYOPs, I was given the assignment of going out, taking pictures of dead bodies and whatnot in Mito itself. And I can agree with Phil that Mito looked like a World War II zone, where many of the structures, many of the buildings were just not there anymore. And if they were there, they were not recognizable. To tell you that one quick story, we had a guy got his newspaper back from home, and the headlines were the biggest headlines they'd ever run. They were huge headlines, and it said 2/3 of Mito destroyed. So it was a major conflict.
Now, if anybody wants to look up the city we're talking about, Mito is two words. The first word is Mike Yankee, M-Y. The second word is Tango Hotel Oscar, T-H-O, Mito.
Correct.
Canto, where I was, is Charlie Alpha November, its first word. Tango Hotel Oscar, its second word. We had two buildings, psychological operations. One was a four-story steel-reinforced concrete structure for residents, and the other was a four or five story steel reinforced concrete structure for operations and residence both. And we do have a break. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is J.R. Moore. I want to talk to you for a moment about my sponsor, GoldWealthFinancial.com, and investing in gold and silver. Gold and silver coin investing is considered a safe investment because of its physicality. For this reason, it's where many institutional investors put their money when signs of an economic downturn strike. In most stock market crashes and corrections, the prices of gold and silver rise steeply, while stocks and other exchange-traded funds plummet. At my website at thelibertyman.com, you'll find a link to goldwealthfinancial.com. You need to check them out. It's a great website, great people to work with, and they have a telephone number. That telephone number is 480-440-7100. I say again, 480-440-7100. Check them out, do your research, and give them a call. Thank you.
Well, I wish I was in the land of cotton wool, and there I'm not forgotten. In Dixie's land, where I was born, in early on a frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixie land. Then I wish I was in Dixie. Hooray, hooray, in Dixie's land I'll take my stand and live and die in Dixie. Away, 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 down south in Dixie. Away, 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 down south in Dixie.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Ralph, you can have your seat and stop saluting the flag there. I know that's what you're doing right now when we're playing Dixie. We're talking about the Tet Offensive. Well, gentlemen, our headquarters at the time for the psychological warfare was not far from Fourth Corps compound. The Cobra attack helicopters had shell. I was on the roof. And the shell casings, as they were shooting the machine guns at the Viet Cong, were falling down on us. And we had to kind of duck out of the way because that hot shell casing getting down the back of your neck would be, well, that would not be pleasant. Across the street from 4th Corps compound, which, by the way, had been a French Foreign Legion compound back in the day, was Canton University. The main academic building was about a six-story steel-reinforced concrete structure that was literally reduced to rubble during this, because about 12 Viet Cong got up in there with rocket-propelled grenades, belt-fed machine guns, and everything else they could bring with them, mortars. And they literally destroyed the entire university complex to take out those 12 Viet Cong. One of our guys, he was a journalism major at Lehigh University. He took a bunch of photographs, had an article published at the university newspaper, and he got in a lot of trouble because the Army did not want the truth to be revealed about what went on in that war, did they, gentlemen?
No. To say the least, no.
Well, Phil? They're part of the government. Does the government want the truth out about anything?
Generally not.
Amen. Amen.
Generally not. And I know I went there a naive young man from a little country school, Herculaneum, Missouri. We're all three of us from the Midwest. And speaking for myself, my whole attitude about government and the war, it changed dramatically. How about you, gentlemen?
Oh, yeah. I hear Phil laughing. Yeah, it had to change because when you I went over there kind of like you, John, sort of naive about war, naive about the government, and my dad, like probably your dad, was in World War II.
Oh, yes.
And the World War II veterans were treated much nicer when they got home than we were treated.
That's
to be quite honest with you.
That's being polite.
And, oh, yeah. And when I didn't even know it at the time, but when I was in Vietnam, I thought we were there to actually protect the world against communism, right? That was line that we were given.
Yeah.
And I was not to find out until after I got back home that we were really there to support the world's most corrupt government in the world.
Phil, you're putting your take on this, Phil.
Well, let me comment towards about being naive and young and all that.
Right.
During the Tet Offensive, we had to stand extra guard duty. We had a guard tower on our compound, you know, a big wooden tower with sandbags. And we had a 30-caliber World War II machine gun. And I stood at least one, maybe two, I can't remember exactly, but I stood guard there for probably a four-hour shift at a time. And I was behind that 30-caliber, and I was thinking, being interested in weapons, I think, all right, come on, bring it on. I'm ready. I'm gonna win the war here. And you talk about stupid and silly and young, but I learned a few lessons along the way, and nothing ever happened with the guard tower duty. As far as the government, I'm brought up in public school just like you, and they don't teach you crap.
Let's keep it clean, gentlemen. We got a family radio show here.
Okay.
Yes. Well, the Tet Offensive officially went on for, I believe, 3 months. The worst part, of course, was the first 3 days. The first morning, I went to bed. Everybody was celebrating. About 2 a.m., I thought, well, there's more fireworks. No, it wasn't. It was machine gun fire and mortars and rockets. That was the beginning of about 2 a.m. And so as the morning went on, we were, at least I was, laying on my belly watching what was going on outside the perimeter there. And we got the radio going on with Radio Saigon. And there's a report about 10 a.m., mid to late morning, that the American Embassy compound had Viet Cong on the grounds, and which is 90 miles from me. Saigon was about 90 miles from Can Tho. And I'm thinking to myself, the United States Embassy has to be one of the most secure places in the entire country. If there's Viet Cong in there, what chance do I have down here behind these sandbags and 2x4s with chicken wire on them down here in where I am? It did not look very good, gentlemen, did it, gentlemen?
There you go, John, thinking again. You're not supposed to think. You're in the Army.
That's right. That's right. I tell you, the worst part of it for us was, I think, after the official offensive had already started. We didn't get hit until about 8 or 9 days into it. And then they would hit us with mortars and rifle grenades every day. And, I mean, every day, every night, sometimes during the daytime, which was almost unheard of.
Yeah, usually the mortar attacks were at night. Here's our break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We're continuing our energy cleaner promotion, which began August of 2016. In this promotion, you get to buy an energy cleaner, $70 off retail, and a mattress pad, 10% off retail. $200 of the purchase price of the energy cleaner goes to Republic Broadcasting. This is a great way to help get energy cleaners out to people who need them and have some financial issues to deal with. And, of course, a great way to support Republic Broadcasting. Here's what you do. Send in a postcard. My address is John Moore, P.O. Box 201, Davidsville, Missouri. We pick a postcard every 2 weeks. If your postcard is drawn, you get the chance to buy the energy cleaner $70 off retail and 10% off the mattress pads. Put your name and your address, your telephone number and your email address on the postcard, and we wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
All right, we're back. I'm Jerry Moore here on Thursday, the 31st day of January. My website is thelibertyman.com. The Amazon products are now up and running. Just be sure and turn off your ad blocker for thelibertyman.com and for Amazon. Turn off the ad blocker for those two websites, and you'll see hundreds of items for sale there. Also, my website, of course, Energy Cleaners for Sale. Do your homework. Read up on it. Read the testimonials. Read the patent application information. Then go ahead and place your order for the energy cleaner and a mattress pad at my website or by calling my toll-free order line. It's 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Any other people who were in the Tet Offensive who are listening, you want to jump in here and give us a comment or ask a question? We got three guys who served in military intelligence who were part of the Tet Offensive. The call number is 800-313-9443. Well, gentlemen, I was pretty dismayed that our outfit in Canto was not stocking up on ammunition or food, either one. I did both. My foot locker, we all had foot lockers. I kept the fruitcake that my parents sent to me. I had a girlfriend mailing me chocolate chip cookies, and I stocked up on food, and I was borrowing and doing extra duty to get ammunition. I volunteered for guard duty at the Air Force Base. They knew they were going to get hit one night. I looked up the major in charge security for the Air Force Base out there at Bantui, and I said, me and my buddies, we will pull guard duty for you at the place you think you're going to get hit on your ground attack if you'll give us all the ammunition we can carry when the night's over. And he just smiled and agreed to that, and we pulled guard duty on the perimeter. They got hit about 2 o'clock in the morning with mortars and rockets, and we didn't take a ground attack. I should have cut a tougher deal. I should have asked for hand grenades and pop flares and everything else, because I know he would have agreed to it. You know, he would have. And, Ralph, I was asking you to bring back you guys in the 9th Infantry Division. You were capturing about 3 BARs a month, and I was asking you for months to bring back a BAR, but you didn't want to lug that 18-pound rifle with you, did you?
No, carrying around BAR is not my cup of tea, so to speak. I never got a chance to, I mean, we may have captured them, but they never presented them for my inspection. I was a lowly Spec 4.
Well, we were all Spec 4s, but... We did not have automatic weapons where I was, and I would have loved to have had a BAR in that roof instead of my M14 and a good supply of ammo and magazines. But that 18-pound rifle is not a fun thing to carry around, is it, Ralph?
No. The closest I came to one was being in a firefight one night. And I had a BAR on one side of me and an M60 on the other side of me. The seminary was blessed with having plenty of weapons and plenty of ammo.
Well, when this first sergeant was taking roll call late the morning of the first day of the Tet Offensive, he had all the men gathered around him. He was standing on a milk carton. He wasn't a really tall guy. And he says, everybody who has one or more magazines, hold your hand up. We had guys who didn't have one magazine of ammo, believe it or not.
Good God.
Yeah, that was pretty shocking. Two or more, a bunch of hands went down. Three or more, almost all the hands went down. Four or more, there was myself and about three other guys. Five or more, and I, one other guy, myself. Six or more, that guy's hand went down. I'm standing with my hand, and the first sergeant got along with me pretty well. He smiles, and he says, "More, how many magazines do you have?" 10, first sergeant. He says, "More, keep five of them and distribute the rest to these guys who don't have any." I said, "Yes, first sergeant." We had enough, now moving on to food. We had enough MREs to feed every man one meal if they split the meal between them. Half a meal for each guy. That's all the food we had. Of course, I had my footlocker with all the goodies I'd saved, and I shared with the other guys. But we were terribly unprepared when, you know, here I am, a 20-year-old Spec 4 corporal. The only thing between me and the wastebasket is, you know, I'm the lowest on the totem pole when it came to intelligence. But I actually read this stuff. The senior officers and even the lower-grade officers, they didn't did what I do. I actually read those intelligence reports. They were busy. I don't know what they were doing. One of them was trying to date the girls who worked as secretary for us unsuccessfully. But I actually read this stuff, and I knew it was coming. I was getting ready and telling my buddies. I said, man, they're going to hit us. You need to save up food. You need to get ammunition if you can get it, because they're going to hit us. They're going to hit us hard. And that's what led to that lawsuit where General Westmoreland sued CBS over what happened up to the Tet Offensive. God bless General Westmoreland. He could have fought World War II all over again quite well, but he did not understand the nature of guerrilla warfare, did he, gentlemen?
No, he was like President Johnson.
It didn't sound like it from what I heard.
Yeah.
Well, and that's another reason, you know, in World War II, if you were in a safe area, you didn't have to worry about arms and ammunition for the guys, because the battle was someplace else, which is why the Army didn't provide us with the ammunition we needed to be safe, because we were considered rear echelon. And all the flag rank officers, most of the field grade officers were either veterans of World War II or Korea or both, weren't they, gentlemen?
Oh, sure. Oh yeah. Say, you know, John, speaking of being unprepared, I just happened to think, I told you that our billet was in the city in an old hotel.
Right.
And so we had to drive to the compound every day, but in the evening we drove over to the Marine headquarters and ate mess there.
Was that Navy Chow or Marine Chow?
No, that Marine. Marine. Really? They had great chow there. But, you know, I don't think they ever thought of what if there was a major attack in Da Nang as there had been in Wei. We wouldn't have been able to use the streets to go back and forth. And I don't know that they had any food at all in that company. I mean, they might have a few sea rations, but I don't think they thought that out too well.
Well, we had the same situation. Where we had chow was another French Foreign Legion military installation with us, the soccer field out front. The French loved to play soccer. And to get back and forth to eat during the Tet Offensive, we didn't get out to get anything to eat until late in the day the first day. We literally had to run an armed convoy through the streets, and it felt like Paris in 1945. The people, I never saw the Vietnamese smiling and cheering and waving at us ever. Before that, we were running an armed convoy through the streets to get a meal and back. Huh. And that's pretty much the only time I really felt good about being there. How about you guys?
Yeah, my experience was the people kind of just ignored you.
Yep, that was right.
Unless you're going through the street and they've got to get out of the way of the deuce and a half truck, then they get a little annoyed, but that's pretty much it.
How about you, Ralph?
We kept our heads down for the first eight or nine days, so I really didn't get out until after the major offensive. And when I got out, about all I saw were a few college girls on bicycles. And a lot of the civilians were still holed up, not doing much at all. So I didn't see any visible reaction at the time from the locals.
That reminds me, in May of 75, when the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese took over Saigon, I saw those college girls, and they were clearly college girls because they had a certain way they dress, with 45s in their hands and red bandanas tied around their arms. They were Viet Cong.
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, Ralph, what did you do for eats that? Six or seven or 8 days that you were holed up. Sea ration?
No, hell no. Let me tell you, first of all, the seminary was, like I said, the first big compound of its kind in Vietnam, and it was actually known all over the country. So that compound had its own chef. We ate high on the hog. Every day. I mean, you could count on a big, thick piece of roast beef for your evening meal. Now, we didn't have much variety. So our evening meal consisted of roast beef, mashed potatoes, and English peas with a homemade roll. And our chef was known for entertaining guests from all over, people who would come, like I say, people who would come to Vietnam would land at Tan Sanut, and then they'd come down to Mito. To illustrate that point just a little bit, in 1963, there was a General Cummings that came into Vietnam, and he came into Saigon, went down to the seminary, and at the seminary, he gave a speech to the guys down there. And he was quoted as saying, and I'm sure you've heard this quote, he was quoted as saying, "Gentlemen, Vietnam may be an ugly, nasty little war, but it's the only war we've got, so we have to make the most of it."
I was told that by Green Berets. I was told that by any number of Green Berets. Well, John, it's the only war we got.
Yeah, that's right. We got to make the most of it.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of lieutenants got their tickets punched, you know?
And that's why the U.S. Army worked then and the way it works now. If you want a career in the Army, you have to accomplish certain things, and having that CIB, Combat Infantryman's Badge, was a critical part in the career of Army officers, and as far as that goes, enlisted as well, wasn't it?
Sure.
That's right. The more salad you got on your chest, the better.
Yep.
Well, I know I volunteered for combat missions, air missions, and I was so happy that I got something to wear my uniform, which was the Silver Wings, as opposed to having nothing on my uniform. How about you guys?
Well,
yeah, I got an air medal. And
yeah, I got my wings, too. I spent more than 50 hours, I would say well more than 50 hours, dropping leaflets out of either choppers or fixed-wing aircraft. Mostly fixed wing.
Right.
I've got a nice picture of me in the helicopter broadcast set up, strapped to the helicopter. I don't know if guys ever saw that.
Was that the thousand?
I think it was.
That's what I had too. It would door that Huey.
You also got some time on the Brownwater with the Brownwater Navy, didn't you, Ralph?
As a matter of fact, the Time Life people gave us an honor, saying it was the first time the Army and the Navy had worked joint operations. I used to spend a lot of time on what was called a PBR, which was like a mini. PBR stands for Patrol Boat River. In Army technology, but it's Navy, and I used to go out with a PBR crew on a regular basis, handing out toothbrushes and propaganda to the people on the river, on the Mekong River.
Well, the Bosak River went right past Canto, and the Mekong River was the next major river north of us, and Bosak was a tributary of the Mekong, of course. But getting back to the Tet Offensive, that changed the entire picture of the war, especially politically at home, didn't it, gentlemen?
Well, we weren't at home, but that's what I understand from history.
Well, I had a subscription to Time magazine and the St. Louis newspaper, and things changed dramatically with what was going on. The Army is doing their best to conceal how many Americans were being killed. They instead of releasing the numbers of dead GIs every day, they spread it out over weeks to make it appear to be fewer casualties than actually were taking place. The Army took out a lot of bad press, out of what happened during the Tet Offensive, didn't it, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure did, especially after that light at the end of the tunnel business, because that came just weeks right before Tet. And I think Tet pretty much, I got the feeling that the anti-war movement really took root after Tet. I may be wrong on that, but that was the feeling I got.
Well, the Walter Cronkite brought this war into people's living rooms 5 nights a week. And I've noticed they're not doing that with the current. We've been in war continuously now for 17 years in Afghanistan, and the war is not in people's living rooms every evening, is it, gentlemen?
No, it didn't. No. You don't want the war. They found that out the hard way. And listening to body counts, I can remember coming home after the war, and they were doing body counts every day. And they would always say hundreds of Vietnamese or Viet Cong killed, and maybe 20 or 30 Americans were killed. And this was just like something they did every night.
That's right.
And
that's right.
It was sickening. It made me almost physically ill to hear that junk.
It was almost like a professional sports score where they give who won and who lost by numbers. Well, it was a war of attrition, and General MacArthur warned us to not get involved in a war of attrition on the Asian landmass. We should have heeded his warning, shouldn't we?
Oh, yeah. We messed up in a large way. There's just no doubt about it. That was the worst.
Well, now, come on, John. People got to make money selling ammunition and military supplies. Hey, you can't keep the economy down.
Well, you could do it the way we did it, or do it the smart way. The Russians did the same thing, except they weren't having Russian boys sent back in coffins. But they made lots of money with MiG jet fighters, Kalashnikovs, medical equipment, communications equipment, and so forth. We got a break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Satisfaction.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product, and I recommend it to everyone. Great product! It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
John Moore is taking your telephone calls right now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Pick up the phone and join in the conversation. Call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And thanks for listening to RBN.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Jared Moore here on the 31st of January, visiting with my friend Phil and Ralph. We're talking about the Tet Offensive. Well, Jim, and we're down to the last 3 minutes here. Let's talk about the takeaway. We got people out there listening who weren't even born when this took place. We got some veterans who were there just like we were. I'll give you my takeaway and I want you two to jump right in there. My takeaway is, first of all, don't trust the government. Second of all, support our troops. Make sure that if they're sent to a war, regardless of the how worthwhile the war may or may not be, make sure that these men and now, unfortunately, women have what they need, that the rules of engagement are realistic. Recently, the rules of engagement in Afghanistan have changed. They were unrealistic, getting people hurt. And work with Congress to bring the wars to an end. President Trump's promised us to get out of the Middle East. I believe he's about to do that. I hope that he'll get out of Afghanistan soon. That's my takeaway. Ralph, what's yours?
My biggest takeaway is I compare myself with some of my friends here in town. They believe that the president does not lie to the people. And my takeaway was, presidents have been lying for years. All presidents lie to the American people. It may be a cynical kind of an outlook, but I don't have much faith in my government. I don't have much faith in our presidential people, be they Republican or Democrat. I'm one of those people who believe that Republican and Democrat are just two sides of the same coin. Neither one of them are good. But that's my biggest takeaway from that, is that they got us into a shooting war over nothing. And all we right. had 50,000 people. We had 50,000 kids that died for nothing. That
okay.
makes me mad.
Well, it should, and it does me also. Phil, what's your takeaway, sir?
Well, what surprises me is you said you knew about this coming Tet attack, and you'd seen the intelligence, and I believe you. But according to the news and going by what happened in my unit personally, it supposedly was a big surprise, or, you know, the units might have been on the lookout for something unusual or something big, but it's like, yeah, we don't really know. So,
well, see,
I don't know what the...
Right. Well, the way secrets are kept is by compartmentalization. I was in the CIA right. headquarters every day, 5 days a week, picking up documents and got to know these people, and I actually read this stuff. There was a book written by the station chief in Kanto, titled Station in the Delta, which kind of alludes to this. Gentlemen, we are out of time. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, John. Talk to you again.
Okay, we'll talk
Friday. Love you, Ralphie. Love you, John.
Love you too, buddy.
That's it for the day.
Love
get your medical supplies, your energy, clean your essential oils now while you can, your firearms, ammunition. Never, ever give up your guns. Please do a fun, safe, productive day, and God bless America.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.